Welcome to AUSA's Army Matters. I am Unzinger Curry.
And I am Major Brad Cooper.
And together, we bring you Army Real Talk. Major Cooper, I am particularly excited about this podcast.
How so, ma'am?
Well, we'll be able to explore the other side of the United States Army. We'll have opportunity to speak with someone from the Army Warriors Fitness Team.
Ooh.
An Army diver.
The Army has divers?
They do. It's not just the Navy.
What?
And we'll speak with someone from the Army Esports Team.
Ma'am, esports is not a sport, ma'am. They're just playing video games.
No, no, no. Esports is truly a sport, just like basketball, hockey, or even chess.
Okay, all right.
So they're going to enlighten me and our listeners about the vast range of skill sets and jobs within the United States Army.
Yes, definitely looking forward to it.
Captain Brager, share a little bit more about yourself, your service in the Army, where you're from, and a little bit about your family.
Sure. So I am a 71 Foxtrot, which you may never meet again. There are less than 30 of us, or 40 of us, in the entire Army. We like to call ourselves the unicorns of Army medicine, ensuring that our soldiers are performing at their best cognitively, mentally, and are able to bounce back from stress.
Excellent.
I've been in the Army 2.5 years, been stationed at the Walter Reed Army Institute of Research, just outside of DC. I grew up about 4.5 hours away in Youngstown, Ohio, which of course we talked
very
about,
nice.
You know very well.
Yes,
you have
yes,
family
my
there.
From there. Excellent.
And,
so you're a Buckeye fan?
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Oh, man.
So I actually grew up with Jim Trussell's kids.
Oh.
His middle daughter, Carly, is one of my best friends.
Oh, that's very cool.
That's cool. Yeah. That's cool.
Thank
I'm still
you.
A Big 12 fan, so we'll keep on with this podcast going. Let's
we'll
go.
We'll forgive you, Major Cooper.
Mm-hmm. As long as you don't like Michigan Wolverines.
Okay.
Not a Michigan fan either, so.
Yes, there's
none
someone I know very well that is, but we will forgive her as well. Very nice. Okay, so you are a neuroscientist. Tell me, what exactly is a neuroscientist?
So a neuroscientist is, in the simplest terms, somebody who studies the brain. Whether it's at the level of behavior or physiology, looking at brain anatomy. So my specific area of expertise is focused on chemicals that are released from the brain and how those chemicals control sleep, how long humans sleep, as well as the timing of sleep. And we like to study these so we can then come up with strategies for enhancing sleep. And of course, performance, because you can't perform if you can't sleep.
Right.
So how long did you go to school to be a neuroscientist?
So in total, I was in school for about 15 years.
Good Lord.
So this is the Army is my first real adult job, which I got at very the nice. Age of 34 when I directed.
Real adult job.
Very nice.
Yes,
very
I didn't
nice.
Get a real paycheck until then. But
yes.
The Army took care of my loans, which is great.
That's good. Right. That is
there
great.
There you go.
Yeah.
Another benefit of joining
exactly.
the Army.
So I did... 4 years of undergraduate work. It took me about 5 years to get my PhD. And then I did a fellowship in Atlanta, Georgia, during that time where I perfected my craft and then came on as faculty at a medical school before moving to Walter Reed for a job in direct commissioning.
So what made you want to be a neuroscientist and study the brain? I mean, what drove you to this at the age of 20?
So I had always been fascinated with the brain. And I had always been fascinated with sleep. So ever since the age
I love sleep. I'm fascinated with it right now.
Exactly.
Stay awake.
So I've been an athlete my whole life. And one of the things I always noticed that is if I didn't sleep 8 hours, I could not perform the next day. I was a two-sport athlete. I did gymnastics year-round. And then I balanced that out with track and field and cross country.
Wow, that's amazing.
Nice.
So if, and even my school performance too, if I didn't get 8 hours, it would suffer.
Right.
So I made a commitment early on to always get 8 hours. I also was fascinated by dreams. So I kept a dream journal. And so, you know, all those things together in terms of something that's completely controlled by the brain drove me to study neuroscience. And I also went to Brown University for undergrad.
Nice, Ivy League, all right.
Yeah, it was a good time. It was a rigorous academic load balanced with doing athletics, but it was great experience. But there, I met people who had gone on to win the Nobel Prize for areas in neuroscience.
Nice.
And had a really strong neuroscience program. So pretty much every single course at Brown had a component of neuroscience integrated into it.
So what stimulated your interest about joining the Army?
So I had always wanted to serve. My grandfathers, of course, served in World War II. We never had anyone serve since then, but I was always just, gravitated towards things of selfless service.
Very nice.
And, you know, I thought about joining the Peace Corps at one point, but it was always in the back of my mind. However, I didn't really think there was a way for me ever to actually join the service, you know, right. past college.
Right.
And it turns out that, you know, that opportunity was presented to me 2 years ago and I took advantage of it.
Excellent. So you spoke about you being an athlete.
Yeah.
So one of your other passions is that you are part of the Army Warrior Fitness Team. Tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. I am absolutely honored to have been selected for this. So this is an initiative set up by USAREC out with Major General Muth, and then a AMED recruiter, First Sergeant Grabs. And really, they started to recognize that the Army has an amazing group of talented elite athletes. And so they wanted to capitalize on that in order to recruit more athletes into the Army. Mm-hmm. You know, it's great in terms of retention in the Army, because if you're recruiting athletes and they learn to train their bodies early on, they're less likely to get injured during basic training and you know, stay injury free throughout their Army career. Yeah. And so they solicited for applications in November. They got 350 applicants. And then of those 350, they invited about 25 people to come out to Fort Knox in February for a 3-day competition. Mm. And
so what were some of the prerequisites or the parts of the competition that you guys had to do?
So a majority of the athletes were trained in strongman and CrossFit, because, you know, CrossFit is one of those training modalities where you're really pushing your body to its, you know, physiological and psychological
total body
limits.
Fitness. Right. Yeah.
Exactly. And it takes years to train your body to that level. I would say most of the people you see competing on ESPN in the CrossFit Games, you know, they didn't get there overnight. They've been an athlete their entire life, or they had been training with such intensity for 5-6 years before actually making it there. And so that really it comprises our team. I've competed in the CrossFit Games in the past. We have Captain Smith, who is competing in the CrossFit Games, the upcoming CrossFit Games. And there's also a bunch of other high-level athletes that have been on the Titan Games, which you may have seen. NBC.
Yes.
And other high-level CrossFit competitors as well.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. So how many, 25 were invited to go, I guess, take part in the competition.
Mm-hmm.
So from that 25, how many people were selected to actually join the team?
So they selected 15 of us.
Oh, wow.
And it was based on raw individual talent, but then of course how well you work with other people, because a large part of CrossFit competitions now are team-based.
Right. Yep.
And you know, you can have three amazing athletes. I mean, think about the time with LeBron and Dwayne Wade. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they thought they were this dynamic duo, and how many championships did they actually win together? Not as many as people thought.
Right.
So they really wanted a group of people who are able to work together. So some of the events that we were tested in order to select a team were team-based, mm-hmm. and to see how you communicate under pressure and when you're fatigued.
Very cool.
Just like anything else you would do in the Army in a combat situation.
So are you guys planning to, or have you done already? So I know it's mainly all CrossFit, but is there plans to do marathons? Because that's, you know, I mean, it's more of an individual, but that could be some, you know, form of team-based, or like the Ironman competition, or do you guys do mud races, et cetera? Are you guys planning to do more other than just CrossFit?
So they are trying to bring in some more extreme endurance athletes. In terms of a Spartan race or a mud race, yeah, I could absolutely see us doing something like that. Because what's awesome about this team is we all have different athletic talents. Some of us are power athletes. I'm more of a mixed modality and endurance mm-hmm. athlete, as is another individual. We have, of course, our strongman competitors.
All right. Here you are, a neuroscientist, and you are a true athlete. And I must congratulate you on being selected of the 15 that were selected as far as Army Warriors Fitness Team. So what are the relationship between being a neuroscientist and an athlete, or, you know, fitness warrior fitness person?
So I actually, even before I was in the Army and selected for this team, I wrote a popular science book called Meathead Unraveling the Athletic Brain, because I truly believe that the two are not separate. You know, if you go back to the Roman philosophy of healthy mind and a healthy body, and if you look at a lot of high performing people in America, in industry, business, and even the Army, a lot of them were athletes in their previous life, because it requires not just the physical endurance and discipline to be an athlete, but with that comes mental endurance and discipline. And, you know, bring it back to neuroscience, when you're talking at the level of the brain, there are actual real-time changes in the brain in terms of growth of actual brain areas, and the connections between brain areas strengthen, and the speed of processing of the brain improves as well.
Very cool. Very cool. That's awesome. So you guys are selected for the team. How long is y'all's obligation to be on the team?
So it's a 2-year commitment. Okay. And I believe they're going to do another tryout next year to, you know,
get the new class in.
Yeah, to get new people in, train them up, and to supplement us.
Now, is there an obligation for afterwards? Is it like, I'm on this team for 2 years and I got to serve 2 more years in the Army, give back, or there's really no obligation?
I don't believe so.
Okay, so you've only been stationed here at Walter Reed. Have you gone anywhere else unique for TDY or anything like that? Or
yeah, we've worked with a few of the special operations units during training exercises. You know, that's what's really cool about my job is while I am a bench scientist, much like I was before, I do have the opportunity to impact the Army directly and educate soldiers, especially those operating at the highest levels, about sleep, measuring their sleep, and then at some point bringing that information back to the units.
Very cool. Very cool. So what is your favorite part of both of your jobs? So you, as a neuroscientist, what's the favorite aspect or area of that job? And then as far as being an Army fitness warrior, what's the favorite aspect of that job?
So in both cases, I would say it's the same. So somebody told me once years ago to plan your career around your lifestyle, not your lifestyle around your career.
That's really good advice.
That's really what I've tried to do with my professional life and my personal life, because I go to work every day and I don't feel like it's a job at all. With science, in order to be successful, it can't be 9 to 5. You constantly have to be thinking about new ideas, reading the current literature, and then how your research is going to advance that. And it's the same thing in, you know, sports too, is you constantly have to be changing how you're training. One is because of age. That's something I've learned ever since I entered my 30s.
Oh,
and now,
man,
that I'm closer to my 30s.
My knees be killing me.
I'm closer to 40 now. So it's become even more important that I train. Right. And then, or train smartly.
Train smartly.
But then, you know, changing your strategy, because people are always getting better and you have to find a way to tweak the system to keep up with those people.
Right, right. Very nice. Okay, good, good. Well, we have learned a lot. I might have to have some counseling after we go off air. No kidding. But good information about you being a fitness, part of the Army fitness team, as well as a neuroscientist. Thank you for talking with us as well as our listeners.
And to our listeners out there, 8 hours of sleep. You heard it.
It's actually 8.4.
8.4. Get it.
Very nice. Very nice. Thank you. Sergeant Hampton, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm from Muskegon, Michigan. I originally joined the Navy back in 2000.
The Navy?
Yes, the Navy.
It's cool, man. It's cool. It's cool.
Yeah, I got out of the Navy in 2011, and I became a commercial diver. I did that for about 4 years, and then I joined the Army in 2015 as an Army diver.
So what you do in the Navy? I at least got to put a plug in for them.
So I was an aviation bosun's mate aircraft handler that's one of those guys you see on the flight deck waving their hands around. I was a flight deck.
Oh, you did the signal stuff, like over here.
That's me.
Okay. Sounds good. Very nice. So you stated that you are in the diver program. Will you tell us a little bit about the diver program, the history, and what you're involved in doing?
Yeah, so the dive program's been around for a really long time. I want to say it was the early 80s is when it actually started off. What I do out here is we support DPAA. We fly off to Vietnam. We go to all over the South Asian Pacific. We cover all of those areas over there. Currently, we actually have some guys over there right now.
And what are they doing during that mission?
They're looking for KIA and missing in action.
From the previous wars, from like Vietnam and Korea.
Yes, that's correct. Okay.
So what is KIA?
Killed in action.
Okay. How does one become an Army diver?
So just like everyone else, you have to join the Army first. You enlist in the Army, you do your 9 weeks of basic training. And to be a diver, you have to get selected. So you'll go to Fort Leonard, Missouri, and then you'll do a 3 week selection program. It starts off anywhere between 10 to 15 students will go through the selection phase. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the 3 weeks, there's only usually maybe between 2 and 3 people that'll actually make it.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah, it's a pretty tough program. It's extremely physical, mental. I mean, you're fed knowledge through a fire hose and then, you know, you're swimming for hours in the pool. It's a really tough program, but it's really good. And then you ship off to go to Panama City, Florida. And then you're there for almost 6 months going through the rest of the training. And that's just as equally as hard.
So what kind of the training do you do at Fort Leonard Wood?
So at Fort Leonard Wood, while you're there, you learn basic dive knowledge, basic dive physics. You're getting physically fit. You're getting used to the way that the military programs operate their dive school. So you're running a lot, you're swimming a lot at very high rate speeds. And it's just to kind of get you in that mental mindset to be able to make it through phase two.
So are there, obviously you have your training, but are there any certifications that you have to complete? Are there any exams to the level after you have became or been selected as a diver? Like what is all entailed after you have become a diver?
So in order to actually even start the program, the very first day of selection phase, our phase one, you have to take what's called a DPFT. It's a diver's physical fitness test.
Okay.
It starts off with a 500 meter swim for time.
Nope. Not bad with that. Round the bat.
You do push-ups to your chest has hit the floor, and then sit-ups, pull-ups, chin over the bar, and then you run a mile and a half, and it's all time. So that's the first requirement right there.
Right. Okay. So as a diver, what is your day-to-day operation like?
We do a ton of maintenance. So we have a ton of life support equipment. Day-to-day, we're not diving every single day, right. But the days that we are diving, we're out on the water, we're in the harbors, we're somewhere in another country. Mm-hmm. Day-to-day, it's kind of hard to pinpoint exactly what we're going to be doing.
I understand. Okay.
So other than looking for KIA, missing in action, whatever you want to call it, what other missions have you guys been called to do?
So while I was stationed in Virginia, I was attached to 569, the dive detachment there. While I deployed, we went to Kuwait. And probably one of the more interesting missions I got selected for was I went into Al Asad, Iraq, and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers was getting ready to install a new sewer line underneath the base. And while I was there, they were like, hey, we need you to crawl in this sewer line.
It was, for real?
It was completely empty.
Man, I've been to Iraq 3 times. Man, it's disgusting.
Yeah, it was completely empty, but it was almost 2 miles of crawling on my hands and knees with the dive gear on.
Very nice. Wow. So what is your favorite part of being a diver?
My favorite part, I would have to say, I don't know exactly how many dives I've done, but I know it's a lot.
Right.
And every dive I've ever done has never been the same as the last one.
Right.
It's always changing. It's every day is a new day when we actually go diving. So I love that thrill of it.
Right. Yeah, sounds like it. So what would you say to a young man or a young woman who's just enlisted into the Army and said, this is the goal, this is the direction I would want to go? What would you say to them?
I would say to them, work hard, know your goal that you want to have. Physical fitness, you need to be extremely physically fit.
Sounds like
it. Dive school, so start with the minimum, the diver's physical fitness test, and you should be able to take that any given day of the week, back to back, because that's one of the first things you do as phase two is you'll do the entire physical fitness test forward, and then you do it all backwards.
Okay.
So just make sure you're physically fit for that and just mentally prepared, ready to go over there and do that.
Very nice. And how long is the school or diver school?
It's approximately total with phase one and phase two is approximately 7 months long.
Okay. Sounds good. So what are the opportunities outside of the Army? Once you retire, I'm assuming you're going to go for it and retire. What are the opportunities as far as the civilian sector?
So in the civilian sector, become a civilian commercial diver like I was before.
Right.
Some guys go out, a lot of our guys, we get out and they get jobs at our maintenance facilities. We call it SM. Mm-hmm. It's a just a maintenance facility.
Right.
Really good government contract job. I mean, there's tons of opportunities out there.
Very nice. Okay. And a little bit more about you. How long have you been serving?
I've been in just the Army.
Yes.
So I've been in the Army for 4 years.
Army only counts. Okay.
Yeah. Army counts, man. Army only counts. That's cool. I love my Navy friends and my family, but Army only counts.
He got it right this time.
That's good.
Okay. So 4 years. Very nice. Okay.
So let me ask you this. Going back, when you're telling us, you know, the Army divers have been around for years. So how many Army dive teams are in the Army?
So currently right now, there's 4 dive teams at Fort Eustis. And there's 1 dive team here in Hawaii. And
do they rotate out?
No, they don't. So the 4 dive teams in Virginia, they stay there and they all support the Kuwait deployment missions on that side. And then the 7th dive detachment that's out here, that I'm currently attached to, we support USERPAC.
Gotcha. And how many folks are on your team?
25.
So that's for in Hawaii.
In Hawaii.
Okay. So let me ask you this. So your PCS movements are limited. So if you PCS from Hawaii, you go to Eustis, or can you be attached to San Diego Navy folks or Norfolk, or can you go to some other naval base around the world?
So we have some abroading assignments. It all depends on what's available. We have jobs that'll pop up in Fort Leonard Wood. You can go there and be an instructor. You can go to
Oklahoma City.
We've got 2 guys who are on my last dive team. They're in Key West, Florida right now. They're supporting the Army's Special Forces Combat School.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We got guys in Flint, Michigan right now. I mean, there's a lot of options out there.
And there's opportunity and there's room for growth, because obviously you've been in the Army for 4 years and you're already in E5, which is great.
Yes.
It's where you should be at. But What's the pyramid scale looking like for you to get the staff sergeant or sergeant first class?
So when you come to the dive field, in order to pick up E5, you have to do what's called a salvage diver checklist. And it's just a bunch of tasks that you learn throughout dive school, and you have to show proficiency in each one of those tasks, whether it be underwater welding, underwater hydraulic tools, underwater demolition, surface decompression charting. I mean, there's a ton of checklists. Once you meet all of those guidelines and you've gone to BLC, then you can promote to E5, and then E6, you'll have to go to ALC in Panama City.
Normal stuff.
Normal stuff. But you're learning more advanced dive physics, more advanced dive medicine, and you're learning how to supervise a dive.
Okay.
So promotion E6 is usually pretty fast. You'll pick up 6 in 5 years.
Oh, cool. So what's your next step for you?
Right now, I'm getting ready to train to go to ALC. So nice. I'm actually hoping to go this year. In October. So,
okay. Awesome. Well, congratulations in advance. Very nice. All right.
That's awesome.
It'll be a dry clock.
Yeah, that's awesome. I didn't know there was that much to the Army divers. Everybody thinks that the divers are in the Navy.
Right.
So, Sergeant Hampton, I appreciate you coming out here today and telling us a little about what you do and, you know, and your career and how you got there. So, thanks.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for your service.
Thank you.
So, Sergeant First Class Jones, first, thank you for being here. But tell us a little bit about your time in the Army. How long have you been in the Army? Where are you from? A little bit about your family.
I'm originally from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, born and raised.
Very nice.
Joined the Army June 17th of 2003. Not that I'm paying attention.
I still remember my date too. It was April 26, 1997. I joined the Georgia National Guard.
Wow. You're old there.
I am kind of old. But you remember those dates.
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Those dates.
Yeah, MEPS is an unforgettable place, yes. Especially when you're going to leave.
Absolutely.
I've been in the Army for about 16 years. I have 3 kids, beautiful wife. We've been together for almost 15 years.
Wow. Very nice. Very nice. Yes, congratulations. And thank you for your service. Nice.
Thank you very much.
Very cool. Well, good. So why did you join the Army?
Well, it was one of those things where I was attending JROTC in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of, you know, got a little bit of understanding there. Had prior service family members. My dad was in the Navy, uncle awesome. Marine Corps, grandfather U.S. Army Air Corps in World War II. So a little bit of tradition. And a lot of things changed when September 11th happened. Right. I was in high school, and I kind of cemented myself as wanting to serve, mm-hmm. and wanting to kind of you know, make that step forward.
Right.
So soon as I could, I was, as soon as I started my senior year in high school, I ran to my recruiter and I enlisted at that time. So it was kind of just wanting to enlist for that traditional sake, wanting to serve at that period of time. And then also kind of wanted to dabble in law enforcement. So military police was one of the things I was leaning towards at the time. So it all kind of just fell together.
Okay. So is that your MOS?
Yes,
originally?
That was the MOS I originally enlisted for.
Okay. So then what took you to the recruiting side?
I actually came up on orders to recruiting while I was at Fort Bragg. I was doing covert and overt narcotics investigations.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Those were fun times.
It was a lot of work, but it was a really good job. It was definitely something completely different. I'm lucky to say I've done a lot of different things in military police corps. And when I came over into recruiting, I kind of noticed that training as an MP helps you with interpersonal communication.
All right.
So, you know, you kind of able to talk to people out of nowhere and, you know, just have normal conversations.
Very cool. I must say, I commend you on that, being that I teach interpersonal communications. So very it's, nice.
I just don't like to talk to people that much.
Uh-oh. We're going to work on Major Cooper.
Right. And, you know, over time, I kind of noticed that I kind of understood the way recruiting worked and how, you know, every time you run into a new person or somebody walks in the office or anything like that, you're helping the next generation. You kind of help him mold that next generation that's enlisting in the Army. And I had, you know, Sergeant Major and everybody that really wanted me to convert, and I eventually did. Mm-hmm. And I mean, little did I know when I would be jumping around to different stations as a station commander, I would find myself being the NCOIC at U.S. Army Esports.
Very cool.
What seemed like a somewhat trivial switch ended up becoming a huge part of the change in my career.
Right. Okay. So you brought up esports. Tell us a little bit about the Army Esports team.
Well, the Army Esports team, the bottom line up front is to connect America to its Army through the passion of gaming. Just like we know, gaming is in about 70% of homes right now.
Absolutely.
Whether it's mobile, console, PC, it's everywhere. So
Candy
it's
Crush on my phone.
Okay.
Absolutely. It's embedded in our culture and lifestyle.
Yes.
So a subsection of the gaming community as a whole is esports.
Right.
So it's competitive gaming.
Okay.
It's something that has been growing overseas, especially in Europe and Asia, mm-hmm. starting to gain a lot of steam in North America. The gaming industry alone is about a $1 billion industry by itself.
Wow. Okay.
And esports is starting to kind of rival that amount of money as far as what it makes.
Mm-hmm.
So professional teams, you know, you have Dallas Fuel for Overwatch or something like that. Mm-hmm. It follows the exact moniker of traditional sports,
right.
But it's video games.
That's very cool.
So just like we have the Army Marksmanship Unit, the Golden Knights, the mm-hmm. World Class Athlete Program,
mm-hmm.
it kind of is a no-brainer. Why we shouldn't be in this. This is our entire demographic, 17 to 34.
Absolutely.
Almost 49% female. So everything demographically, this is
very
the place
cool.
that we should be. I mean, my generation specifically, we grew up on the Nintendo Entertainment System.
Right.
That's what kind of revolutionized gaming. So,
right.
you know, it was kind of just this one thing that, you know, luckily Major General Muth was the one that brought it up and said, we need to make this happen.
Right.
So,
cool.
you know, luckily for him being there is why I get to be in this position.
Absolutely.
So how long have you been on the team?
I came to Fort Knox around November of last year.
Okay. And so what are the prerequisites for joining the esport team? What kind of drills or testing do you guys have to go through in order to consider yourself on the team?
So what we're doing is we're basically pulling everybody to our Discord. It's discord.gg/US Army Esports. When they come into there, they in process. So it's, you know, showing whether you're active, reserve, civilian, because it's open to the public. And, you know, whatever game you want to play, whatever platform you want to play on, you click on that particular one you're interested in. It'll open up those channels and they can go straight to a game manager. So we have volunteers across the Army. There's about 8,000 soldiers that have volunteered their time just to either play or participate in a leadership role, doing this on their free time to help bring everyone together. So once you get into this game that you're looking to be competitive in, now you have to prove it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to scrimmage, you're going to tournament, you know, everyone else that wants to be a part of it, because we want to see who rises to the top. And then based off of that, where we picked 16 soldiers so far to come to Fort Knox, and it's through different games, even though we probably have 30 plus different games that everybody's participating
yep.
in.
Mm-hmm.
fitting that into 16, we had to be a little bit more careful. So we chose League of Legends, very popular esport. College scene is really huge. Even the high school scene is really big. So we have 5 soldiers that are going to come in for League of Legends. We have 2 for Fortnite. 200 million player base.
Oh yeah, of course. My son plays it all the time.
Exactly. So, highly competitive. It's not a normal esport, but at the same time, it garners consistent content and, it has a competitive scene on that side. I have 3 soldiers that I picked up for Apex Legends.
Okay.
Which is a 3-person competitive game, but they're also, as a first person shooter, Apex has that crossover to other games like Call of Duty and things like that. So, there'll be a little bit of cross training there. I even brought soldiers in that are a commentator.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually an aviation soldier, mm-hmm. but he's a commentator and also graphic design.
Wow.
I brought in a staff sergeant who is military police, but he is really, really good at graphic design.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of akinning almost the entire program to the esports industry.
Yeah. Right.
This is very common to see where esports is actually looking to hire production commentary because traditional sports commentary doesn't fit.
Right.
None of them know how any of these games work. So there's a whole new era of jobs that are just coming out of nowhere for the esports industry. And we're kind of basically replicating that in our own system.
Yeah, got it. So you mentioned it's all the Fortnites and the first person shooters and the other games earlier. Are they playing like Madden 2000? Are they playing any of the sports games? Do you have folks on your team that do that as well too?
The what we call at large, so the soldiers that won't be at Fort Knox, but the ones that are in the Discord participating, we call those at large. So we do have Madden, we do have NBA 2K.
Okay.
So we have some of the traditional sports games. Those surprisingly are as large. As an example, we even have World of Warcraft Mythic Dungeon Invitationals and Arena World Championship. I myself have been a World of Warcraft player for over a decade, so.
Cool.
There's plenty of games out there like that have the competitive edge that we're looking at.
Very nice. So paint the picture for me. You're going to a tournament. Mm-hmm. You walk in. What do I see?
So the easiest one to give you would be a fighting game tournament. So when you walk into a fighting game tournament, it's going to be obviously in a large arena.
Right.
And it's not going to be set up like you normally would imagine, where it's just one stage.
Right.
Normally they have 4 or 5 stages.
Okay.
And a lot of tables in the center and a lot of consoles.
Right.
Because the idea is you might have 1,500, 2,000 people show up to compete. So all of them have to go through what we call the pools.
Mm-hmm.
So you get assigned to a pool and you have to work your way through it.
Okay.
So
process each, of elimination.
Absolutely. Okay. So, best 2 is 2 out of 3.
Okay.
So everybody's going through that motion and over normally about 2 or 3 days, as the pool starts slimming down, you start getting into the top 32s, the top 16s, that when everything starts becoming a main stage event.
Mm-hmm.
And every single match is the best of 3 of 5 when you're in the top 8. And it starts getting, just like you would imagine the hype around any type of traditional sports event, the same level of enthusiasm is right there for esports.
All right, I can see that.
And it is super exciting, especially when you add the international mix into it, when you have people from different countries competing. And now it's almost like going to the Olympics when you see an American player win, everybody's chanting USA.
Right.
Yep.
That's cool.
It's super popular. Everybody really loves it. The ones that I've attended so far have been absolutely motivating.
Very cool.
So let me ask you this. So how do you train for this? I mean, you see the athletes for all Army basketball, all Army, combatives fighting. I mean, those guys train like almost 5 days a week on their skill. So really quick, how do you guys train for these gaming events? I mean, you should probably know, I'm assuming you guys know a week in advance what type of game platform you're going to be playing and the type of game, correct?
Correct.
So how do you guys kind of train up for something like this?
Esports training kind of, once again, mimics traditional sports training. Okay. So if you take a game like League of Legends, that's very team-based, what you're going to do is you're going to have that team, play almost like normal, if you will, because that's kind of what the luckier things that they have is just be able to cue into the game and, go in a competitive and, play for a certain amount of time, maybe that block of time, maybe 3 to 4 hours. After that time, they're going to need to go back and actually review their own footage. So most competitive teams will record they're competitive.
Got it. Okay.
And review the footage, because you want to make sure you're strategizing. You want to make sure every lane, because especially in League of Legends, is broken down into certain lanes, where you have a mid laner, a top laner, a jungle, and each person has to run their specific area, just like kind of Fields of Fire, yeah, or very close to what we just do in the Army. So a lot of strategizing comes around to say, you know, you should have been here. We, you know, we can execute this particular move set here in order to counteract this particular hero. So there's a lot of analytical data that has to come in and break it all apart. Now, the difference would be in each specific game. So a first person shooter might have a little bit of different training than a team-based game, or a fighting game might have a little bit of making sure that you're using specific combos for specific characters against other characters. And it's more individually based, obviously, versus team-based. Outside of that, physical fitness, nutrition, all those things, even posture, all those kind of things matter when you have to actually go to a tournament. You may sit down and compete for 8 to 10, 12 hours straight. Mm-hmm. So you know, a lot of people make the Army, well, and I don't know why y'all call it a sport, because you're not really. But at the same time, you can make the same argument about chess or poker or anything like that. You know, sitting for 8 to 12 hours, racking your brain, doing specific movements for a long period of time can drain anyone.
Of course. Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. I get drained just by sitting on my desk at work.
Oh, wow.
So is it a two-year commitment if you get selected for the eSport team?
Currently 3 years.
Currently 3 years. Okay. Any other additional service obligations after the fact for soldiers that are on the team?
No.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then it's open to all officers, warrant officers, enlisted, and anybody that's got the skills that can make it.
Correct.
So how does this equip you moving forward? So you talked about a various, I'll say a broad range of skills, obviously knowing how to play, then graphics, production, and things of that nature. Are you learning some of these other skills that will equip you moving forward? Or are you just focused on your skill set to, you know, increase and improve in that area?
I think we'll be looking across the board. So there's going to be a lot of cross training. Mm-hmm. A lot of these soldiers are going to, you know, meet one another for the first time face to face. You know, a fighting game player might also be a fan of League of Legends, or a League of Legends player might also be a fan of Apex Legends. Okay. You know, every player kind of has more than one game. You know, majority of the time they're competitive in one, but maybe interested in others, or they may be interested in IT career. I think I have a couple of soldiers who are not Signal, but who are also going to school for IT.
Okay.
So I think some of that crossover is going to happen a lot, especially with the esports industry just being very open arms and super excited that we're participating. And that was some of the stuff they wanted to try, you know, bring home as well, to say, you know, there's a lot of positions out here other than just being a pro player that would be perfectly suited for, you know, somebody like a soldier or somebody else. I mean, I've had pro level teams talk about, you know, wow, if any of your soldiers get out of the Army, let us know.
Very cool.
I haven't even started the program. They're already starting to scout our people. So
That's good.
So speaking of just that, you being a recruiter, so when you're sitting next to obviously somebody that's 18, 19 years old that's not in the Army, I mean, do you take a split second and be like, hey, I'm not only kicking your butt, but I also kick butt on a daily basis, you know, in the Army, let me tell you about it. I mean, you guys definitely have that interaction with those. How many folks are at these gaming events? Thousands of people?
Hundreds of thousands, yes.
So obviously that's probably your secondary mission, is not only to win the competition, but the secondary mission is to try to get as many recruits. I mean, so just like the chief of staff there says, everybody's a recruiter. So how's that going for at the gaming convention? Do they accept you guys, or do they kind of like, all the Army's here, that type of stuff? How do they feel you guys out when you guys show up?
There's a very unique dynamic. And I always say that gamers can sniff it out. They can sniff out if you're shilling. They can sniff out if you're selling. Probably more so than anyone else, because this is their space.
Okay.
You know, gamers inhabit this space, so they know exactly what's going on. The difference here is that when they first engage us, they're first engaging us with the same exact shared passion. So the establishment of connections already there. There's no need to what we say in recruiting, build rapport, right? Because there is rapport. We're playing the same game.
Right.
And then that starts the conversation, whether it's, they want to ask more questions, or we ask the questions. Yeah. You know, hey, what are you doing right now? Mm-hmm. You know, have you ever thought about doing this? No. Okay. Yeah. We obviously only 30% even qualified.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we might say, hey, you know, just fill out some information. Maybe this is something you can look at later.
But I think even if you didn't actually say that, I think it would be really cool to see someone from the Army in the esports and be like, what? I can like do what I love and I'm passionate about and serve my country. I think that's a message all in itself.
So absolutely. That's really cool. That's very cool. Exactly. That's one of the things I'm trying to hammer home,
right,
is, you know, being a kid growing up with gaming and being a huge gamer all my life.
Right.
You know, I noticed so many times in a recruiting station where when I'm wearing a uniform, it completely changes the dynamic.
Right.
They have a complete assumed lifestyle for me.
Right.
They say, well, you must have played cornerback in high school. Like, no, right. I played in the band.
Right.
You know,
right.
I played percussion.
Right.
You know, I did things like that.
Right. The band?
I was.
Oh, right. Cool.
And ROTC at the same time?
That's very cool. Completely. No. The Army loved it.
ROTC, we made fun of the band, folks. Just saying.
I was on the drum line, so.
There you go.
Okay, that's the cool part.
That's right.
Okay. That's a cool part.
No, I think that's cool, though.
So it breaks the dynamic. And absolutely. Once you talk about, like, I really love The Legend of Zelda or something, it throws them completely off.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they say, so, you get to take the uniform off at night? Like, yes.
Right.
And they say, well, I can have internet in my barracks room? Yes, as long as you're paying for it.
Right, yeah. Right.
You know, yeah. And now they want to know more.
Absolutely.
I've had people to where their last thing that held them back from enlisting was, can I stream from my barracks room?
Wow.
And I said, yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, but this day and age, I guess that's a...
Those are the questions that they're asking.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's what matters, because they don't want their entire life being, you know, taken away from them.
Right.
That's kind of what they feel like, even though that's not the truth.
Right.
But this is one of those very unique opportunities where it tells it the right way.
Right, absolutely. That's good. Speaking of favorite games, which one is your favorite game?
It is definitely the Legend of Zelda series.
Okay. Very cool.
Let me see Zelda.
Very cool.
Ocarina of Time on Nintendo 64. That was my life in a cartridge.
I still like the original. The original one that started it all on the NES. You know, I still go back and play that one all the time.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Talking about Nintendo, Mario Brothers. That's right. We bought a little little Nintendo station, and I still play Super Mario Brothers. So, yes, don't worry, listeners. I finally got connected to an Xbox, soon PlayStation. All righty.
That's awesome. Well, we thank you for your time.
Yes.
Thanks for coming out and telling us a little about what you do and what you're doing for the Army and definitely for the eSport.
Yeah, this is really cool.
Community.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I really appreciate y'all having me.
Yeah. No problem. That was a very good talk. I must thank Sergeant Hampton, Captain Brager, as well as Sergeant First Class Jones for sharing the different areas of their service and how they add value to the United States Army.
Yes, ma'am. Just definitely, it was a great perspective. And like I said, I didn't even know the Army had neuroscientists, and I didn't know the extent of what an Army diver had to go through. And I know definitely the Army's doing the right thing with starting up the Warrior Fitness team and the eSport team to reach out to our younger generation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So listeners, I hope you enjoyed. But before we go, I have to share some sad information. Well, sad to me in AUSA, but it's also an awesome opportunity for Major Bradley Cooper. So Major Bradley Cooper will be leaving us here at the Association of the United States Army.
I'm not going far.
He is going to be continue to do great things as he has his new job assignment with the Army Talent Management Task Force. So I am sure you know that right now talent management is the buzz of the Army, and he gets to be a part of that team, which is wonderful. However, as I stated, AUSA will miss him as being an Army fellow here within the headquarters. But I know, Major Cooper, you will continue to thrive professionally as well as personally as you have with us and in your future endeavors. I very much enjoy that you were my co-host of the Army Real Talk podcast.
Good times.
I enjoyed reading your articles or papers from the ILW Spotlights. And thank you for keeping us connected with the Army and educating us about what's going on with the Army. We could not have kicked off and launched this podcast the way we did without you and all that you have contributed. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. I really, truly appreciate the family environment that AUSA has provided me. I've learned a lot, seen a lot, and definitely grown my network. I'm not going far, like I said. I'm going over to the Pentagon, so I know I'll be over here when AUSA has all their hot topics, ILW breakfasts. I'll definitely be walking around the annual meeting, which is 14 through 16 October, so please sign up.
Excellent.
But yes, I really, truly enjoyed my year here as the Army Fellow, and your new person that's coming in, Major Eugene Irby, will definitely be able to take the reins and elevate AUSA to a higher level.
He has some big shoes to fill, but we're looking forward to it. Thank you again, Major Cooper, for all you have done for our United States Army and AUSA.
Thank you, ma'am.
To all of our listeners, thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the Army Matters podcast on iTunes and everywhere podcasts are found. Keep it locked in here for all Army Matters. And for next week's episode, enjoy Family Voices.
AUSA is the U.S. Army's professional association, a voice for the Army and support for the soldiers.
For more information about AUSA or to become a member, visit AUSA.org. And listeners, be sure to have a beautiful yet productive day.
Oh, well.